reason that you had to care. The traffic is stuck and you're not moving anywhere. You thought you found a friend to take you out of this place. Someone you could lend a hand in return.
Good morning and welcome to the Health Matters Radio Show with me, Neil De Silva. It's Monday, it's the 17th of February 2020, and this is show number 87 if you are listening on catch up. We have a great show ahead of us this morning. We are going to be talking with our guest of today is Victoria Smith-Gillard from Amatrine Holistics. Good morning, Victoria.
Good morning, Neil.
It's great to have you on the show this morning.
Thank you much. Pleased to be here.
And we'll be talking to Victoria in about 20 minutes or so and finding out more about what she does and how she helps people. We're also going to talk about mental health. Now, there's been events over the weekend, which I won't go into. This is not the appropriate time or platform to do that. But mental health has certainly raised its head again. And it's certainly hit the headlines. And I'm going to talk about ways that we can spot mental health issues in the people that are around us. So our friends, our family, our colleagues and our associates. And then towards the end of the show, I'm going to talk about some of the myths surrounding mental health as well. Now, before we kick the show off, a quick disclaimer. The purpose of the show is to provide you with competent information on the topics that we cover, and to inform you and educate you in ways that you could improve your own health, or in the case of today's show, health of those around you. But this is on the understanding that I'm not engaged in providing medical advice, and the content of the show should not be treated as a substitute for such. If you have any concerns about your general health or you require medical or other expert assistance, please speak to a suitably qualified healthcare professional, which in many cases can be obtained by dialing 111 or speaking with your local pharmacist first. All the content is provided for general information only, and I encourage you to do your own research. And the show is based on my research, my knowledge, my experience, and often my opinion. And as such, I disclaim any liability that is incurred from the use of or application of the content of the show. Mental health. Yeah, if you've been following the news over the weekend, you would be fully aware of what's happened. A well-known person's taken their life. Okay, so we're not going to go into detail about the ins and outs of that particular case or situation. But I do want to talk about ways that we can spot mental health problems in people around us. Now, I caveat this with the fact that I'm not a mental health expert. Okay, I'm going to talk from personal experience. Now, many of you will know that I'm a Samaritan's volunteer. I have been for a couple of years. And obviously, I talk to people on the phones on a regular basis about mental health related issues, not just suicide, but mental health issues in general. I also lost my younger brother. He was 36 years old and he took his life 2.5 years ago. So I have personal experience from losing someone to suicide as well. Okay, so I'm not an expert, but I have personal experience. Now, when we talk about mental health issues, most people gravitate to the topic of suicide. Now, there are lots of issues and conditions within the mental health umbrella that can ultimately lead a person to take in their life. And these include things like anxiety, bipolar, depression, eating problems, schizophrenia, OCD, PTSD, panic attacks, personality disorders, manic depression. There's a big range of mental health issues within the mental health issue umbrella. So it isn't the case about being an expert on any of these. It's actually being able to spot the signs of someone that might be struggling for whatever reason with mental health based problems. Now, I'm going to talk about some stats for a moment, and you may want to listen again and rewind this bit, because I'm going to give you some numbers, but I don't want to get lost in numbers, because it isn't about the statistics. we are talking about individual people. But in doing my research, there was a lot of statistics that I researched that were quite surprising to me too. So this is, the source of this information is from MFA England, and their website is mfaengland.org. So if you want to do your own research on these stats, please do so. So here we go. So at least one in four people experience mental health issues every year. And in fact, I think Mind put the unofficial figure at probably one in three or one in two, so much higher. 676 million people worldwide are affected by mental health issues. At any given time, one in six working age adults have symptoms associated with mental health issues. So one in six works out around 6 million people in the UK. People with long-term mental health conditions lose their jobs every year around double the rate of those without mental health conditions. This is around 300,000 people. 75% of mental illness, excluding dementia, starts before the age of 18. Men aged 40 to 49 have the highest suicide rates in Great Britain. 70 to 75% of people with diagnosable mental illness receive no treatment at all. Now, that was a shock to me. 70 to 75% of people with diagnosable mental illness receive no treatment at all. Half of all mental health, all mental ill health starts by the age of 15, and 75% of it develops by the age of 18. 12.8% of young people aged 5 to 19 meet the clinical criteria for a mental health disorder. Women between the ages of 16 and 24 are almost three times as likely to experience a mental health issue as males of the same age. Depression is one of the leading causes of disability worldwide and is a major contributor to suicide and coronary heart disease. Major depression is more common in females than in males. Among the general population, 20.6% of people have had suicide thoughts at some time, 6.7% have attempted suicide, and 7.3% have engaged in self-harm. In 2017, there were 5,821 suicides in Great Britain, and then 6,007 in 2018, so it actually increased by about 700. But it's estimated, and this is the real scary thing, that of that 6,507 in 2018, it's estimated that between 10 and 25 times that number attempted suicide, but they didn't complete for whatever reason. More females, and this was an interesting one for me, more females attempt suicide than males, but more men die from suicide than females. And the ratio is about 75% male to 25% female. And it's thought the reason why is because when men attempt suicide, they tend to use much more violent methods. Suicide is the most common cause of death for those aged between 10 to 34. 80 to 90% of people who attempt or die by suicide have a mental health condition, but not all of those have been diagnosed. And around 51% of people aged 16 to 34 who are suicidal don't seek support. And this is where this piece comes in. It's also important to remember that not everyone with a mental health issue attempts suicide, and not everyone that attempts suicide has a mental health issue. So it's very difficult to identify, in some cases, people that are struggling with mental health conditions because it covers such a wide spectrum. So there's no easy test to find out if a friend or family member or colleague is going through a mental health issue that perhaps they're trying to keep to themselves and they're trying to hide. But here are some signs that you might be able to identify with. People around you that maybe they're avoiding your contact a little bit more than normal, or maybe they used to be very social and now they're cutting back on social activities. Perhaps to close friends and family, you've noticed changes in their eating habits. Maybe they're a lot more hungry than they were normally, or maybe they're not eating as much. That can be a sign that something's going on. Maybe they've got an inability to carry out their daily activities or handle everyday, day-to-day problems or the stresses of day-to-day life. Maybe even the smallest thing causes them to explode or to cry. Maybe that's an indication they've got things going on. Maybe they have those emotional outbursts, or perhaps they've got excessive worries or fears, maybe out of the ordinary. We all have our worries and fears, but maybe those worries or fears are just out of balance. Perhaps they are very obviously sad. Maybe they cry a lot. Maybe they're low. Maybe they've become less talkative. Perhaps that's a sign that they need to talk to someone. Perhaps they have problems thinking or concentrating. Maybe they become, as I say, more quiet or more withdrawn. Perhaps they have those feelings of being worthless, that perhaps people around them will be better off if they weren't around anymore. Maybe they have really extreme mood changes. They have really high highs and really low lows that are uncontrollable. Perhaps they have strong feelings of irritability or anger, or they have difficulty understanding and relating to other people. Maybe if it's a close friend or family member, you've noticed changes in their sleeping habits. Maybe they're not sleeping as much, or they're sleeping more than they used to, or they're feeling very tired, or they've got low energy levels. Or maybe if it's a really close friend, or maybe a partner, maybe you've noticed a change in their sex drive. Perhaps they're relying more on substances more than they used to. Maybe they're drinking a lot more, or maybe they're taking drugs. That can be a sign as well. If they've openly spoken about suicide, then that's obviously a real red flag. Although lots of people that do commit suicide don't actually talk a lot about it. They just go through with it. But if they're talking about suicide, then maybe that's a sign that you need to talk to them. And maybe they're having a difficulty perceiving reality. So they have delusions or hallucinations. That can be a sign that there's something going on. So when we look at those, those indicators, if you can identify one or more of those, it doesn't mean that the person that you're worried about has a mental health issue, but it might open up a conversation. I've seen on social media over the weekend, and I commend people for saying, come and talk to me, come and talk to me. We need more of that. We need people to talk more, and we need to know if people have got mental health issues, that there's people that they can go and talk to. But mental health is a very complex topic. People that are struggling with mental health issues need to be listened to be understood. They don't always want answers. They don't always want solutions. So it's a little bit difficult if you're opening yourself up to be spoken to by friends and family. If you are becoming the go-to person for mental health issues, be careful. Look after yourself, okay? Because there is a skill to managing and handling someone that is struggling with mental health issues. But when I did my research, I thought I would expand it beyond just adults, and I would look at children as well, because children, as I mentioned in the statistics, also struggle with mental health issues. But the interesting thing with children, particularly younger children, is they are still learning how to identify and talk about their thoughts and their emotions and their feelings. So with children, the signs are not always emotional as such, or come from thoughts. They are more behavioural. So in younger children, you can spot changes in behaviour a lot more obviously than with adults. So some of the changes that you might notice if you've got children or you are around children are things like changes in their school performance. If they're quite a high performer, they get good grades, and suddenly those grades start to drop. Or maybe in tests, they're not getting as many high grades as they used to. That can be an indicator. Maybe they are showing excessive worry or anxiety, or maybe they're fighting a lot more with the teachers or with other children, or maybe with you as parents. Perhaps they've got hyperactive behaviour. Maybe they're getting lots of nightmares where they didn't used to have nightmares. Maybe they're showing aggression to you, not maybe physical, but verbal aggression, or they're becoming more disobedient towards you, either as a teacher or as a parent, or maybe they're having frequent temper tantrums. Again, all of those physical signs can be an indication that there's something going on with that child. And hopefully that would open up some form of dialogue and discussion with them. So we've spoken about the different types of mental health issues. We've spoken about how to spot the signs. If we're not the one struggling with mental health, how can we help those around us who do have or are displaying signs of mental health issues? Well, one of the things we need to do is we need to listen to understand, not listen to respond, okay? People with mental health issues don't always want solutions. They don't always want answers to their problems. They just want to be felt, to be understood. They want to be validated. Now, if you can constantly try to provide them with answers or solutions, you may make the problem worse. So certainly in the first case, open yourself up and allow them to be listened to, okay? So talk a lot less than you listen, okay? That's what I'm saying. Don't be judgmental. Allow them to share as much as they want to or as little as they want to. Don't pressure them into really opening up if they don't feel comfortable at that particular time. Okay, it's their conversation. Okay, just allow them to open up as much or as little as they want to. Keep questions open-ended, okay? It will make the conversation a lot easier if you use the how, the what, the when, the which, okay? Try and avoid the why, okay? Why can be can sound quite accusatory. So the who's. So basically questions where they can't give yes, no answers, where they're encouraged to open up. And of course, if you feel that they need professional advice, professional support, you might want to provide ways on which they can do that. And as I mentioned before, know your limits. Know that self-care is really important. If you are vulnerable yourself, be very, very cautious about opening up to someone who is also vulnerable, because it can make your feelings worse as well. Now, you might want to direct someone towards their doctor. You may want to go with them to their doctors if that's what they want. But also Mind is a great charity, a mental health charity that you can refer to. And also Samaritans, 116, 123, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Samaritans are there to listen in a very non-judgmental way. And if you are not struggling with mental health issues at this moment, but also you feel like you could help others, then you might want to consider volunteering, either for Mind, and they're always looking for volunteers, or also, as I've done, with Samaritans as well. And Samaritans' website is samaritans.org. If you're interested, go to samaritans.org and you can apply to be a volunteer. Now, you're hearing my voice. It's a very emotional subject for me, very, very close to home because of my personal experiences with my brother. But I really hope that information has helped you. It's really brought mental health to the forefront, the events over the weekend, okay? And it's not about just opening yourself up to be spoken to. It's really about being able to identify in those around you those who are struggling for help, maybe they're too scared or too worried to come and talk to you, then maybe it could be a conversation that you initiate. So after the break, we are going to go on to our guest interview with Victoria. But to take us there, we have a classic from the 80s. It's Brian Ferry and Slave to Love. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Health Matters Radio Show with me, Neil De Silva. A quick reminder of the show's social media feeds on Twitter. It's at Health Radio Show, so pop over to Twitter and you can follow the show's feed. On Facebook, search the Health Matters Radio Show and you can like the show's Facebook page and be kept up to date with recent and current and future developments. And you'll be able to listen again to this show and all previous shows as well on the media page of my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. And also, I have an iTunes podcast and all the shows are there too. Go to iTunes, type in the Health Matters Radio Show in the search bar, and you can subscribe to the podcast. So on to our guest interview of today. Today we have Victoria Smith-Gillard from Ametrine Holistics. Good morning, Victoria.
Good morning, Neil.
And I'm really looking forward to finding out more about what you do, because actually I have a huge diverse range of people that come on my show and have done over the last couple of years. And yeah, you're quite unique in a really nice way, because we're going to talk about animals as well within your interview. So I'm really fascinated to find out more about what you do and how you help people. But before we talk about that, perhaps you'd like to give us a bit of background as to what led you up to doing what you're doing now.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I was young, I was bullied at school. I've always been very empathic. I've always been very highly sensitive, and that wasn't really understood at school. It wasn't really understood at home. Now, that's not putting any blame on parents. At the end of the day, it's not something they would have known how to deal with, quite honestly. And so effectively, I tended to turn to animals for love, if you like. I turned to them because the love they give is absolutely unconditional.
Yeah, definitely.
So I would turn to them. And that's kind of where it started, really. And I just ended up just building, and so did my brother, actually. He's in the animal world as well.
Okay.
But basically, you know, both of us, we've ended up building this really deep connection with animals, so much so that I can tune in very well to them. And I mean, I was rearing wild kittens at the age of 7.
Wow.
You know, and actually that was at my music teacher's, the same place where I turned up one day for a music lesson, and he had a bumblebee on his finger, mm-hmm. and he was like, just stroke the bumblebee. And I was like, okay, that's random. And and I did, and actually it's something I now do. So if I give them, you know, nectar on a spoon, I'll actually just very gently stroke them, and they really do feel that.
Wow.
And it's beautiful. And it kind of started from there, really. I had teachers at school that often they would actually find me to walk me upstairs, because I was always the one that had really hot hands.
Right.
And hot hands and tingly hands are often quite indicative of a healer. So
okay.
You kind of think, oh, okay, like maybe that's part of that kind of trait, if you like. So it kind of stemmed from there, really. And it just kind of gradually went through that I was, even in, you know, as I verged into kind of the working world, I was always the one that people would come to for advice. They'd ask me questions. I was often the one that would spot people's strengths, in a way, people's weaknesses, but I don't mean that in a bad way, but just the things they didn't like. And I'd be like, well, you like this, you don't like that. Why don't you guys swap? And then we're all working as a team in the most effective, productive way we can. I was always the active listener. I was always the one that would empathise. So it's kind of always been there, but I've just not been very conscious of it. I mean, in the veterinary role that I had, you know, when I went for promotion, my boss at the time said to me, you've got the best client empathy in a 600-staffed company. And at the time, that wasn't really something I took on board. But, you know, when you actually think about it now, go, oh, my goodness, like, wow. But again, that empathy has really served me well, because if we had clients come in, you know, when you have a veterinary referral consult, it's quite long, it's quite detailed. There's a lot of, you know, long jargon words in there, a lot of, you know, condition names, things like that. And sometimes people would come out and be a bit, you know, bowled over. And because I could feel that, I was able to then say to them, would you like me to get the vet up again? Would you like to speak to them?
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of always been there. In terms of actually kind of how I've led up to what I do. So my qualifications have kind of gone from being, I worked in veterinary referrals for 8 years, We were then made redundant from that. That's a bit of a long story, which we won't worry about going into.
Mm-hmm.
And effectively, that actually was a really good point for me to be at. It was a crossroads where I had that choice to decide to either go back and just continue to do admin roles, which I knew with the fibromyalgia that I had at the time would be really difficult, or I follow my heart and actually start doing something I wanted to do. And by then I'd already started to kind of look into coaching a little bit and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, no, do you know what? I've got redundancy payment. I'm going to use it. It's possibly the only time I'm ever going to have it. And so I decided to follow my heart. And from that point, from making that decision, all the things started to then flow. So I began at that point, actually, when we were made redundant, to open up to spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
And I started going to spiritualist church. I started to learn a little bit more about that side of things. My numerology is a spiritual messenger, which, you know, the minister there said it's a medium. And I was like, oh, okay, no pressure then. You know, I was like, I don't know anything about all of that kind of thing. And it really went from there that I was given signs. I asked for signs spiritually and was given signs and I was guided. So I got signs to train in NLP. I loved it. I tried to train in coaching and all the walls were coming up and barriers and they weren't mine. And I was like, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
Saw loads of signs about NLP and hypnotherapy. And I thought, well, do you know what? I'm going to give it a go. Let's see. You know, I feel like I'm being guided, so I'm going to do it. So I went and trained in hypnotherapy, absolutely loved it. And then really from there, what happened was actually I got into helping people, which I loved doing. But I knew something was missing from my business. I just didn't really know what at that moment in time. And one of these days I went onto YouTube. I've always had a passion for big cats, absolutely love pit cats. And I'd gone onto YouTube because at that point I'd already trained in energy healing.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I wanted to just Google it and just see if anybody had done energy healing with big cats. And they had. And I sat there watching this video and burst into tears. And I was like, well, that's pretty random because I actually felt completely fine until I'd watched this. And me being me, I then obviously decided after that to actually sit and reflect on this. You know, why am I feeling like this? What's created this? And it was basically a conversation with my inner child. And she was very upset, to say the least, and quite angry that I wasn't working with animals anymore.
Okay.
And this was a powerful reflection in two ways. One, how much your inner child can still talk to you through, like, effectively doing journaling. That's how we did it.
Mm-hmm.
And she drew me that picture with animals. And I kind of sat there and went, absolutely right. You know, I can't believe I've let that go because I love animals. You know, I've been very close to animals since I was young, the veterinary referral side of it, always been drawn to animals. And so that was an amazing point to then kind of actually start training in the more animal side of my business.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I trained in canine flow, which is working with a dog's emotions to help transform their behavior. And then a strange thing happened. I went to an open day at the Big Cat Sanctuary and I didn't mean to do it, but basically I communicated with a tiger and I won't name him, but bless his cottons. I was just standing there and just felt this wave of emotion from him. And I was like, oh my goodness, I'm picking up how you're feeling. And I looked at him and he looked me straight in the eyes. And at that moment, I was like, you understand what I'm saying. You're connecting with me on this. You know I've felt this.
Must have been quite a moment.
It absolutely was. It was so poignant. I mean, there was thousands of people all around me, including some family members as well, who were sort of looking at the other cats. And it was like no one was there. It was just me and him. And it was the defining moment in me then going, I need to look into this more. There's definitely something to this. And, you know, I know it's an animal. I know they're an animal, but I absolutely credit them with starting me on the animal communication journey. And then it just went from there, really. Me being me, I tried and tested it with friends' pets. So I had one dog that told me that the cat was pregnant, which was really sweet. And I was like, okay, well, They are saying, yes, they are, but you do need to take your cat to a vet. I cannot tell you that your cat is pregnant. And she was absolutely pregnant.
Wow.
You know, and I communicated with geese in Moat Park because, again, I'd gone for a walk and I thought, you know what, I'm going to just try it. So one of them is called Sam. I can't tell you who. But yes, they told me their name as I was talking to a pigeon. So I was just like, okay. And I've learned very much from people around me, the spiritual sort of side of me, that, you know, if the things you get back surprise you, then it's definitely not your head coming into it. And I have had some very surprising comments from them. And that's really sort of how I got into doing what I'm doing, because from doing the case studies, especially canine flow and animal communication, I started to realise that actually owners do affect their pets emotionally and behaviourally. You know, our pets will pick up not just on how we're feeling, but they pick up our beliefs about ourselves and also about them. They pick up our ailments. Because I have kind of the other side to me is the metaphysical side to symptoms of illness, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
So I look at that side of it, you know, what emotions are creating that within our body and where it is. And very often, you know, I've seen pets mirroring what's been going on in the owner. So again, you know, I look at it from that side of things. And that's really how I've become the people and pet therapist is purely because I can see both sides. And because I can work with pets and I can work with the owners, I'm like, well, that has a long-term solution then. Because if I just work with pets and don't work with the owners and help them with their issues, then the pet's still going to be picking up.
Yeah. The problem isn't going to go away, is it?
No. So.
Wow, that is really, really interesting. excuse me. So, we will talk in a moment about specific case studies and examples of pets that you've helped and animals that you've helped. But
expect the crazy.
I find it really fascinating. I mean, I'm a cat person, if there is such a thing. And without a doubt, cats do pick up. Cats are very intuitive as well. And they pick up a lot on not just the way you are, but your emotions, the things that you're going on inside your head. The cat seems to... Yeah, I don't know how. Okay, yeah.
I can't explain it, but
yeah, I find it fascinating. But so let's talk more about your actual services. So
yes,
so you are a people and pet therapist.
Yes.
Okay, so you have lots and lots of qualifications in other areas as well, but we're going to focus on the people and pet side of it today. So talk to me about the or tell me about the three ways that you actually help people.
Okay, so the first of all, I predominantly work with women, but I'm more than happy to work with men. But I predominantly work with women who have been codependent or are codependent. So effectively, this is women that often have put everyone else's needs above them. There's been possibly a lot of people pleasing in that respect. They've often been in toxic relationships, so often with narcissists, whether that's in a family situation, romantic, friendship. And effectively, they don't have a lot of self-love. They're looking for it outside of themselves. There's no judgment there on that. The reason I say this is I have been codependent myself. And so that's one of the ways I like to help is I like to help create healthier boundaries, healthier self-love, you know, healthier self-esteem, increased confidence. So that's one of the ways that I do work. Secondly, I work obviously as the people and pet therapist. So again, I predominantly work with females, often again, who've had, have or had codependency issues. So I work with pets in that regard to resolve behavioural and emotional issues that they're going through. Now, the main ones that we tend to see are things like separation anxiety, tend to see excessive barking, grief or bereavement is another massive one, because again, obviously they'll pick up on how we're feeling as much as how they're feeling if they've lost a sibling or a pet member of the household. And I also love to work with post-operative cases as well, because obviously what I do can actually help them relax and allow their immune system to kind of kick in and promote healing and well-being. So I do definitely work in that way in helping owners and pets come together much more, understand owners to understand their pets much more, connect with them deeper, have a lot more compassion for them and actually educate them in their pets' needs as well, but also often their own as well.
Yeah.
So thirdly, my third path is that because obviously I've worked in the veterinary world for up to 8 years, my brother's a vet nurse and a practice manager. The vet world actually does have quite a high suicide rate as well. It surprises a lot of people. And obviously that's probably another debate for another time. Mm-hmm. But one thing I would say to people is that, you know, often as pet owners, we may, with or without the combination of the vet's advice, decide that we need to put our pet to sleep. But to actually physically have to put a pet to sleep, for me, I couldn't do it. It would be heartbreaking. As much as I know it's the last kindest thing that could be done for them, you know, as an owner, we're making the decision that a vet physically has to do that. A vet that's known that pet possibly since they were, you know, being able to hold them in their hand.
Yeah.
They haven't actually watched
And obviously vets are vets because they care passionately Absolutely. About animals, of course.
Yes, I mean, often I would yeah. say vets are healers in disguise. They yeah. don't always know that they're yeah. healers in terms of the world that we have. Mm. But yeah, often they're healers. Pets can trust their energy, their emotion, if you like. They mm-hmm. know that they can trust that person. And so, yes, you know, they obviously, you know, the majority of them do have to be what is classed in society as professional at that moment in time. I've never been able to do that. When I worked in vet referrals, I always said to my team, if you want me to be around a client that's having their pet put to sleep, you need to understand that I will cry with them and I'm not going to hide that. You know, I'll hold the space for them, I'll be with them, you know, but I will allow those tears to flow because I'm sad for them and I understand, you know, to a certain point, obviously, what they're going through. And that was always the way I was. And actually, the clients that I had around me said, I don't mind that you're crying because it shows that you care. I'd much rather you did that than actually sit there stone-faced talking through all the different options yeah, that yeah. you know were available obviously after the event. And yeah. So yeah, so they're my three different parts. So I the reason I want to go back into the vet world is because I know it's got a high stress rate, it's got a high suicide rate. Mm-hmm. I've known one vet that did actually do that and commit suicide, and I know at least two others that obviously have been very much on the brink. And so I really would like to help improve and enhance their well-being using the services that I do, as well as educating them about the emotional pet, if you like, about obviously the people and pet side that I do, getting them to understand that actually even in practice, you know, vets and vet nurses and all the team can actually influence the pets in their care, both in a way if they've had an argument or anything like that, but also in a positive way. You know, that pets will pick up the trust and the love that they have for them. They feel it from obviously all that team.
Yeah.
So they're the kind of the three paths is working with all yeah, of those.
It's very powerful. So can you give me some examples of some pets that you've worked with and how you've helped them?
Yes, absolutely. So going back to the bereavement side of things, I worked with a lovely Rhodesian Ridgeback called Bella, and I do have permission to share her details. So okay. she's actually on my roller banner, and bless her, Bella had lost her sibling Edward, who was another Ridgeback, probably about a year prior to that. And basically she was barking at everything. So literally everything that was going on, everything that was going on outside the house, postmen, bin men, people just walking past, horses, dogs, you know, everything. She was just barking all the time. It was excessive and it was quite distressing for the owner herself as much as the dog, because there was another dog there as well with Bella. And so effectively she was, you know, she was grieving. I felt that as soon as I turned up, that she just had so much grief in her. And likewise, obviously the owner was still grieving as well. So I worked with her for just one session. I worked with her with canine flow. Now, canine flow includes canine hypnotherapy, which I know often sparks debate. But I very much work with the hypnotherapy in a lot of similar ways as I would with a client. So I worked with her with a script of actually allowing her to have closure, and actually talking to her about Edward and allowing her to see Edward. And this really helped. The owner could see it. And actually that afternoon, the owner texted me and said, the bin men have just been, she's not barked at all. And that was really beautiful, because that's the thing. It's not about ego. It's not like, oh, look what we've done. It's the fact that actually that pet is feeling better, and that owner is then also feeling better on top of that. Mm-hmm. So that's certainly one of them.
Yep.
I've worked with a lovely a cat called Mouse. the irony, bless her. I love it. But yes, she was very vocal even from the beginning. So when I work with animals, we always ask permission to talk to them or to work with them in a way, with healing or whatever we're doing. And I hadn't even asked the question. She said to me, yes, it's absolutely fine for you to talk to me. So I was like, oh gosh, this is going to be interesting. And so she had issues with her brother. So she would often swipe him, she would hiss at him, and lots of different things were going on with her. So I actually did, she was one of my case studies for animal communication. And so I was talking to her about him and just explained that pretty much summary wise that they are different personalities. She was very much about structure, about order. She actually showed me her in a past life, which was pretty awesome, where she was a house matron. So she actually looked after a kitchen. So she actually looked after a team of people that working in a kind of a stone kitchen. And she was very much about structure, about order. And I explained this to the owner and she said, oh, that's bang on her personality. That is exactly what she's like here and now. And it was very much about that. You know, when the owner explained that the sibling cat used to bring in mice, the first thing Mouse said to me is, why would you do that? We're fed. So there was a lot of disdain. And so, yeah, I just had a chat with her about it, you know, answered her questions, talked to her about it. And so they're actually now getting on a lot better. And even when I go round now, actually, she'll still talk to me. Mm. And she's still just as vocal. She'll still say things. So I know the lady's got a puppy. Mm. And the one thing she said to me, without me even connecting really with her as I normally would, is, why does he stare at me? So, I mean, she's just got a lovely personality. So she was great. I've worked with a beautiful dog who's now in Spirit. He was one of my Canine Flow clients, and bless him, he got involved in a road traffic accident and mm-hmm. passed away. Mm-hmm. And I've actually done communications with him for the owner, and this was amazing for her because she had actually, it was really the start of her spiritual journey. She'd actually been seeing him, she'd been hearing him, she'd been feeling him laying on the bed, she'd been seeing him out the kind of peripheral vision. And so for me to be able to come along, not know any of that, I ask people not to tell me that, so that mm-hmm. when I do it, obviously I'm not being fed. And we were able to actually say to her, yes, he is around you. This is what he, you know, this is where he's been. This is what he's saying. And again, he's given me past life with that lady. So, I mean, yeah, just some of those cases, it's just amazing the difference you can have, not just with the pet, but also with the owner
with
themselves.
The owner as well,
A lot of it's about people understanding that pets do hear what we're saying.
They're more than just pets.
Absolutely. They're sentient beings. And, you know, when you joke and say, right, if you don't behave, I'm going to send you back to the shelter, they get it. They understand it. Mm. You know, and I have had a pet have that and said, I'm confused. Am I going or not? And the owners were absolutely gutted to know that. And they then explained to me afterwards. So this is the thing, is where people understand.
It does make you think. It does make you think. So what are your plans for the coming year?
So I've got lots of plans this year, actually. So I want to put on canine retreats. So this is where people can experience canine flow, but also this is also about them gaining a deeper connection to them and their dog, understanding actually, you know, their dog being a messenger in their life and what that's all about. We'll be going through exercises. We'll be giving them sort of tips, techniques, resources to actually work with. I want to do confidence and self-esteem workshops, which ideally would be aimed at people, as I say, that are codependent. And so that would be looking again at creating healthy boundaries, self-love, self-esteem, increasing that confidence, increasing effectively the love they have themselves. I also am going to be running pet bereavement workshops. That's another one on my list as well, to actually help people, obviously, with the grief that comes with actually a pet passing away. Mm-hmm. And I'm also going to be doing two Facebook groups. So one's going to be for pets and pet owners, but also the other one is actually going to be for vets and vet nurses and vet teams on improving well-being. And last but not least, this is something I'm going to be exploring in the very near future, is I'd love to connect and do some charity events. So one of the places I would love to work with is the Big Cat Sanctuary. So if anyone out there from that from that organisation is listening, please do connect. I would love to put on a charity event for you. And I already have people around me in the world that I'm in that are interested in actually helping with that as well. So
excellent. Sounds like you've got a busy year ahead.
A busy year, yes.
So Victoria, in summary, I mean, can you just conclude, who are you looking for? Who is your ideal client?
So my ideal client would normally be somebody who is female, who is codependent, and who has pets exhibiting issues like separation anxiety, excessive barking, sometimes aggression comes into that, pets that are experiencing grief, or bereavement issues. Mm-hmm. They would be the main thing, or even a vet that obviously needs support who's suffering from stress or anxiety or depression, as you know, obviously these mental health issues we've been talking about today. Mm-hmm. So definitely any of those would be great for me to obviously work with, because I would obviously like to make that long-lasting difference in their life.
Super. So if listeners want to get hold of you, what's your preferred method of contact?
So there's various different ways that they can get hold of me. So on Facebook, I have my business page, which is Amatrine Holistics Limited. You do have to put the limited in there. Mm-hmm. So you can message me on there. My email is on there, so you're more than welcome to contact me by email. And also I've got my mobile and landline. So again, obviously all of that information is on my Facebook page. Mm-hmm. I'm on LinkedIn and Facebook under my own name, Victoria Smith Gillard, as well. And you've also got my website, which is www.amatrineholistics.co.uk, which again, we'll have obviously the contact form and all of the contact information for you to get hold of me. And I'm also on external websites. So I'm on the Hypnotherapy Directory and the Hypnotherapy Association as well. So feel free to contact me on any of those.
Brilliant. And what I'll do for you is, when I do the post promotion on social media, I'll add your website link to the post as well, so people can just click through Okay. And obviously make contact with you.
Yep, brilliant. Thank
really
you
interesting.
Much.
Thank you so much for coming on the show this morning. It's been really interesting to find out more about what you do, and not just how you help people, but also how you help pets as well.
Yeah,
it's been great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Some other way to make you see. If it takes my heart and soul, you know I'd pay the price. Everything that I possess, I'd gladly sacrifice. Oh, you to me are everything, the sweetest song that I could sing. Oh, baby. Oh, baby. To you, I guess I'm just a clown who picks you up each time you're down. Change of heart. If it takes forever, girl, then I'm prepared to wait. The day you give your love to me won't be a day too late. Oh, you to me are everything, the sweetest song that I can sing. Oh, baby. Oh, baby. To you, I guess I'm just a clown who picks you up each time you're down. Oh, baby. Oh, baby.
You're listening to the Health Matters Radio Show with me, Neil De Silva. Okay, so we're going to continue the theme of mental health for the next couple of minutes, because we are going to wrap the show up in about 5 or 6 minutes. Just want to talk about the stigma surrounding mental health. Now, a stigma is a mark of disgrace or something to be ashamed of that sets a person apart from others. And we stigmatise people either consciously or subconsciously every day. And I just want to raise this because mental health obviously has a stigmatism around it. We need to deal with it. Okay. It's not a comfortable topic to discuss, particularly if we are doing it subconsciously. And if we're doing it consciously, then that's a whole different issue. But loads of people with mental health issues have to live with these high levels of stigma. And recent research suggested that around 9 out of 10 people in the UK that live with mental health problems feel that stigma negatively affects their lives. And lots of this stigma is comes from myths surrounding mental health. So often people don't really understand mental health issues. They don't understand. They have a lack of knowledge. Sometimes they have negative attitudes about people with mental health problems. They often they label people by their illness, and they forget that they are an individual. Sometimes people with mental health problems are discriminated against, so it's a massive problem. And we have two types of stigma. We have public stigma. So that's where society collectively reinforces negative stereotypes. And then we have self-stigma, where the individuals accept those negative stereotypes from society. And then they too then make themselves feel less worthy of respect because of their mental health illness. So let's go through some myths, because like I mentioned in the first part, at least one in four people will experience a mental health problem in any given 12-month period. As I mentioned, Mind puts it more like one in three and one in two, but we'll stick with one in four. So 25% of people in the UK are going to have a mental health issue in the next 12 months. Now, if you are one of the 75%, understanding these myths will help to destigmatise mental health. So the first is you can't recover from a mental health issue or mental health illness. Well, you can, okay? It's just harder for people to see sometimes. Number two, all mental health disorders are genetic. Well, genetics do play a part in some cases, like bipolar and depression and schizophrenia. But actually, there's been some studies on twins that suggest that actually one twin will suffer with a mental health issue, but where the other twin won't. So not all mental health issues are genetic. Mental health illness or mental illness is rare. Well, as I mentioned, one in four adults will suffer with a mental health issue in any 12-month period. And actually, mental health problems are a lot more common than we would like to think. The fact that they are invisible to the naked eye doesn't make them any less real. Number four, you can just snap out of it. Well, if you turn around to someone with depression and say, snap out of it or cheer up, that isn't really helpful. Number five, people with mental health issues are violent and unpredictable. That isn't the case, actually. And they will often find that they are on the receiving end of violence and attacks. Okay, so that is a myth. People with people are immune to mental health issues. Well, we're not immune. You know, whether it's an injury or bereavement or unemployment or financial issues, none of us are immune from mental health problems. Number seven, people that suffer from mental health issues can't function properly. Well, a lot of them do, and they function as normal members of society. But it takes a lot of strength for them to get through each day, but they do function normally. They go to work, they get out of bed in the morning, they have relationships, they look after their children. Okay, so people with mental health issues can function normally as members of society. And number eight, mental health is not as important as physical health. Well, obviously it really is, and the two are very much interconnected. Number nine, mental health is a sign of weakness. Well, as I said, you know, it takes a lot of resilience to get through each day sometimes if you're depressed, if you're bipolar. You know, it really is a sign of extraordinary strength from people that suffer with mental health issues that they can get through each day. And the last one is that you're alone. Well, you're not alone. If you are struggling with mental health issues, as I covered earlier on in the show, you're not alone. There is help out there. You can talk to Mind, you can talk to the Samaritans, you can talk to friends and family that you trust. But again, if you are one of the people that people refer to or talk to about their mental health issues, remember to listen, to understand, not to respond. Okay, we are out of time. It's been a great show. Thank you, Victoria, for coming on the show today.
Thank you very much for having me.
And a quick reminder, if you want to contact me, please do so through my website, www.i-nutrition.co.uk. And if you want to come on the show, as Victoria has done today, please drop me a line and we'll see about getting you on the show as a guest. So after the last song, we have the Channel Radio News and Weather. But until the same time next week, have a great week ahead. Stay happy, stay healthy, and I will catch you again next Monday.
The heart is a blue. Space to rent in this town, you're out of luck. And the reason that you had to care, the traffic is stuck.